Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky flag. Matt Norlander is here with me, and the biggest news of the past 24 hours is that Mike Krzyzewski, Duke's Hall of Fame coach who doubles as the biggest voice in college basketball, he came out in support of California's Fair Pay for Play Act. NCAA President Mark Emmert doesn't like it, but Coach K is down with it. Norlander, you were in Charlotte. You talked to the GOAT yesterday at ACC Media Day. What are your thoughts on Mike Krzyzewski saying it is time for student-athletes to be able to profit off of their name, image, and likeness? In fact, it might be a decade or two overdue.
Yeah, I was surprised, Parrish, by how advanced Krzyzewski was in his thinking on this. Now, I did a little bit of research after we talked about this on Tuesday in Charlotte, and he has made reference to college players perhaps, you know, deserving more, college basketball needing to do more, the NCAA needing to do more to keep itself forward thinking. But he has never even remotely come close to being as clear, lucid, long-winded on this topic as he was at ACC Media Day. And the way that this all played out was he had a little, what's called a breakout session. So he's sitting at a little table with his name next to it, which is hilarious because someone tweeted out, this is Mike Krzyzewski's 40th year coaching Duke. I don't think he needs the name card at the table, but it was a funny little observation there. So he's got like probably about 25 media members around him. And shouts to the media members who were checking out what was going on with Jack White and Javon Delorier as all this was going down. I hope you got a few good quotes here because Krzyzewski started by saying, I'm going to have a statement on this, a formal statement that's going to be distributed at the end of this little session here, but I'll talk about this right now. I hope that I can talk about it as well as what I think I've put to paper there. And in fact, what he said in that media session and then what I followed up with him on HQGP was better than the written and prepared statement, in my opinion. You have the most influential voice in college athletics, in my opinion, speaking out undeniably in favor of player empowerment. And he spoke to a lot of other bigger things. We can get to that in a second if you want. But this is extremely interestingly timed, given what we've got coming later this month with the name, image, and likeness working group, what they're going to do, what they're going to present. When you have someone like Mike Krzyzewski saying players do deserve more college basketball and the NCAA and its leaders, we've had our head in the sand for too long. He's openly saying, I'm really happy what happened in California. By the end of the season, dozens of states, I expect to pass similar legislation, which is something that the NCAA wants no part of whatsoever. And so on a day where I asked a lot of coaches and plenty of media members asked a lot of coaches to speak about NIL, which is what you ran into at Big Ten Media Day, GP, I found it not necessarily surprising, but particularly interesting that the second oldest coach there, only to Jim Boeheim, who does not agree with Krzyzewski on this, by the way, was as emphatic as he was. It was extremely important for him to say what he said, how he said it, and it wasn't just one or two sentences. Parrish, we've got paragraphs, and I don't need to directly quote. I've got a column up on the CBS Sports app on your phone or CBSSports.com. You can go and check it out. But, you know, he said, you know, we need to stay current with what's happening. And he's happy that this is pushing the envelope. So we're not going to relitigate the whole SB 206 and all that. We've done that on a previous podcast. But this is probably the most notable thing to happen in college athletics this week and probably will be the case until we get to the college football games on Saturday, GP. I just don't think that we can understate how important it is when Krzyzewski says what he says, and he knows that when he says those things, they will not just be heard by Mark Emmert, but they will be heard by every university president who helps create the NCAA's bylaws as we know it. And so I don't think that what he said will be without impact. I think it can have real tangible effect that we could come see to come to light later this month.
You sort of touched on it. I believe Mike understands that his voice is bigger than anybody else's voice, that his words matter more than anybody else's words, at least in this sport. And he came to ACC Media Day incredibly prepared, like understanding of the fact that he's going to be asked about it and understanding of the fact that whatever he says is going to create big national headlines. Like we can, you know, talk to you know, 90% of college coaches about this topic, and you know, we could talk to all of them, and 90% of their, it's a little headline, if it's a headline at all. But Mike Krzyzewski is going to be one that creates big national headlines, that gets on the ticker on ESPN, CBS Sports Network, everywhere else. It sort of reminds me of, you ever watch him in a handshake line? We talked about this before. He's very deliberate in the way he looks every player in the eyes, says something to them, shakes their hand, as if he knows this person is going to remember the time they shook hands with Mike Krzyzewski. And so he wants it to feel like a real moment. He recognizes who he is. Same thing here. I think he showed up at ACC Media Day recognizing that his voice, whatever he said, was going to matter, and he wanted to make sure he had his thoughts together and his words grouped properly. It's sort of the opposite of what John Calipari did, who I think is another massive voice in the sport on this and the other subject. You know, Kentucky had its media day, and John kind of punted on the topic for whatever reason. I'm not real sure, but it does seem, and you ran into this as ACC Media Day, I ran into it at Big Ten Media Day, the majority of coaches are either A, for this, or B, just understand it's just smart to say that you are, even if you're not, because the alternative is to be against student athletes, and most of them don't want any of that. But like you said, Jim Boeheim spoke yesterday on this. He didn't seem in favor of it. And then more famously in recent days, Mark Few at Gonzaga, he didn't really speak out against the Fair Pay for Play Act, but he spent about a 2-minute buildup talking about, we should figure this out. We don't need politicians figuring it out. I love Mark more than anybody. It was not his finest 2 minutes, but he landed at the right spot for whatever that's worth.
He did land at the right spot. We will give credit to our buddy Jeff Goodman, who did that interview with Mark Few at WCC Media Day. Mark Few just, he weaved into a certain lane while telling the governor of California to stay out of his lane. Unfortunately, the job of governors and politicians is to get out of their own lanes and legislate for all kinds of people.
By the way, how do you trick your employer to sending you to WCC Media Day in Las Vegas and Cosmo?
Mark it down for next year, GP. But Mark Few, I know
if I ever end up at Stadium, I just go wherever I want to go.
Oh man. So but point is that Mark Few, broadly speaking, agrees to a certain extent with what Mike Krzyzewski put forth, but the way that he expressed that was obviously different. Okay, so you mentioned Boeheim. Roy Williams, I talked to him about it, and I'll say that Roy Williams was open to it, but was wishy-washy when we talked to him one-on-one on CBS Sports HQ. He also had a quote, I was not in the room when this happened, where he basically says, you know, this is a bunch of crap, no one knows what's going to happen. Like, it was a typical Roy Williams. And then in a completely egregious instance of hyperbole, he said it would be like giving him the nuclear codes, which is just ridiculous. By the way, would you trust Roy Williams with the nuclear codes? I think that I would. Would you trust him?
Relative to who actually has the nuclear codes right now? Yes.
So if Roy's trying to make a certain point.
I would rather Roy Williams run our country right now, if you want to know the truth.
I actually, like, Roy was trying to make a point. He might have, stepped into the kind of the opposite meaning of what he was going for there. I will say, talked to Mike Bray about this on CBS Sports HQ, and he was wasn't outright against it, but he's not all for it. He is in disagreement with you in that he believes that there's going to be almost no value for all players there. And he even made I don't know the name of the dealer in South Bend, but he even made reference to a dealership that I believe he currently has a deal with. He's like, no, that's my deal. Like, they're not getting any of these Notre Dame players. They're not gonna sign them up for any kind of money. So I will note that while most other coaches, Chris Mack admitted, you know, Norlander, if we talked 5 years ago, I was a 180 different on this, and I have changed. There's just way too much money in this sport. Mack was pretty pretty clear on it. And, you know, like all coaches says, you know, I don't have the full plan. I'd have to see the details. But I will give Matt credit for definitely being, I'd say, as aggressive on the issue as any coach not named Krzyzewski at ACC Media Day. But just a couple still not afraid to kind of speak out against it. But that's all, I guess, you know, in the big picture, immaterial. It's Krzyzewski. What he said is the big story here. And the question becomes, will the people on the working group take it seriously? Because also, and I'll throw this back to you on this, it would be, like, Mike Krzyzewski is a very smart man. It would be absolutely ludicrous for him to come out and have the kind of position that Jim Boeheim would have when you consider who he coached specifically last season, but also what he has turned Duke into and what Duke is and how Duke plays on national television. GP, literally more than almost any American sports team, pro or college, given the inventory of the games, like Duke will be on CBS or ESPN almost every single game that it plays for the entire season. So he knows how he's gotten rich to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars. He really has no other proper ethical position to stand on this than the one he did. But it was refreshing to see how thorough he was in explaining his points and his philosophies on Tuesday.
I want to touch on the point you made about Mike Bray, where he says, listen, these guys aren't going to be getting money from car lots, because it's a point I've made consistently that it's not trickle down, but you know what I mean. Like, the quarterback at Notre Dame is going to have probably a national deal of some sort, but you know, I do think a starting linebacker or a starting point guard is also going to have local deals at any place that cares about college athletics. And where I think maybe we have a communication breakdown sometimes is that what Mike is saying is that, listen, I've got to deal with a car lot. It's worth whatever it's worth. But the idea that my fourth leading scorer is going to also have a car deal, like, that's just not real life. Because the fourth, like, there's no real value to that person. Like, put him on a billboard, who cares? And I get it if you are just focusing strictly, like, on it from that perspective. But the point I've made is that when people say they're scared it will become a recruiting tool, I agree that it will become a recruiting tool. I'm just not scared of that because I don't care about it. But right now we just know that boosters and other people who just love their favorite basketball team or football team, they are happy to just throw around money at this point for nothing. Like, it's not even like, hey, let me give you $5,000 to go on a billboard. It's just like, hey, let me give you $5,000 because you play for Notre Dame or because you play for Alabama or because you play for Kentucky or whatever. These rich people who love their school will just throw around money. And so when I say the fourth leading scorer at a place like Notre Dame will have an endorsement deal with a car lot, I don't mean that that person is going to have real tangible value to that car lot. What I mean is the guy who owns the car lot is just going to, you know, think it's cool to have a relationship with the fourth leading scorer on the basketball team and is going to be willing to pay him money to just come out to the place. And it will also become a thing that coaches, you know, either directly or indirectly, let it be known. Hey, listen, you know, here's what the fourth leading scorer on our team got last year. You know, you come to Notre Dame, that's the type of stuff that's going to be available to you. And so all of this stuff, it's not as simple as, does that person actually have value? It's as simple as, does that person have value and or are there people around the program who got tons of disposable income who just like to throw it around for decades illegally under this system, technically legally?
I don't disagree at all. And I think that some coaches use the kind of rhetoric that Bray was using as means to, I guess, to play both sides of the issue and also protect themselves against this idea. And Boeheim mentioned this as well, where it doesn't help their case. It doesn't help their scenario, their situations, GP, where if you do get to this point and you have a basketball locker room, and I know we touched on this briefly on last week's podcast, and you've got player A bringing in, let's just call it 80,000, player B, 15,000, player C, 1,000, and then no one else any, where that's going to create some sort of enmity within the locker room. I don't think that's likely, to be honest. I'm not saying it won't. It's impossible that it won't happen. I'm sure it can happen here and there, but I don't think that this kind of legislation is going to bring about recurring issues within a locker room that aren't necessarily already there. I mean, if you talk to a given coach on January 20th every season, if you pick 10 out of the 353, chances are five of them will, if they're really honest with you, they'll say, yeah, the locker room's kind of a mess right now, and it might be for reasons A, B, C, or D, and those reasons could still very well exist in 2023, 2027, or whenever.
No, the issues in locker rooms are, you know, the small forwards banging the point guard's girlfriend. Like, that's the type of stuff that causes issues in the locker room. It would never be because somebody's got a bigger endorsement deal than another player. Like, that's the point Jim Boeheim made. Like, I talked to my players about it, and I said, hey, well, how are you going to feel if so-and-so over here is making 25 grand and you're not making anything? And Jim said, I don't think it would go over well. And I, you know, again, I've made this point 50 times as recently as last week. I think it's a non-issue, if only because it's a non-issue at the professional level in every locker room or clubhouse or whatever. You know, Tom Brady makes more money than the right guard for the New England Patriots. You know, I can take you back to the New York Mets. Robinson Cano made $21 million this year. Pete Alonso made $555,000. You know, like, it's just sort of everybody understands, like, this is what I work for. And if the Patriots can figure out how to deal with that issue, and the Steelers can figure out how to deal with that issue, and the Clippers and the Lakers and the Raptors can figure it out, and the Yankees and the Royals and the Padres can figure it out, I'm just going to trust that college basketball teams will figure it out. I think that is a straw man argument that there's really no evidence to support it whatsoever.
All right, can I do a few quick hits on ACC teams, players, et cetera? You got anything else on what Kay said?
Proceed.
Okay. Just a few quick takeaways, man. We're getting closer to this. We are now what? So yesterday would have been 4 weeks exactly to the start of the season. We're within a month. The ACC did the unusual thing of not revealing its preseason player of the year, first team, second team, all that stuff at its media day. Instead, just having coaches and a couple players from each program come, and then that will be revealed on Thursday. In speaking with Krzyzewski, Tony Bennett, Roy Williams, Chris Mack, the four coaches at the four schools who are considered to be the four best programs this season in the ACC, got to talking to them, and then people around the league about why it's going to be an interesting year in the ACC GP, and I want to have you in a second reset where you have those four teams in your top 25 and one, which will tip the hand as to how you think the ACC will play out. I do think for the first time in over a half decade at least, we have, while a strong top of the conference GP, to me there is no clear-cut front-runner. If you tell me any of those four teams, Duke, UNC, Virginia, Louisville, winds up winning the league, and any of the other combination go 2, 3, and 4, I won't be surprised at all. I just don't think there's a lot of difference there, and I don't think that any of those four set up as a top three, top four team in the country, me personally. I think that, and maybe not even top five overall. Part of that's because the ACC for the first time, and I learned this yesterday, the ACC for the first time in its history lost its first team and second team end of season selections year over year. There's been a couple instances where they've had one guy return and have a holdover. This year, essentially the 10 best players in the league a season ago are gone. And so with that, there is just more uncertainty about how good they will be at the top end when you don't have either just, you know, absolutely outrageously good freshman talent or seriously proven juniors or seniors that are coming back. You do have good players. You know, I think Trey Jones, Cole Anthony, and Jordan Wara will probably be the three that fight for player of the year. I don't think Virginia's going to have a guy that does that. I think Mamadidi Akite will be good. I think Kihei Clark will be good. I think Jay Huff is going to be awesome. But I don't see any of them fighting for player of the year. So, with that being said, we've already published our ACC preview at CBSSports.com. Parrish, 1, 2, 3, 4, top of the league. How do you assort those four teams? And then from how you listed the league top to bottom, do you have a team in there that you would qualify as a, quote, sleeper in that they're projected to maybe not be a tournament team? You've got them in there, or you just got them a couple slots higher than maybe the general media public?
Well, the top four, I think, is basically everybody's top four, and I've got them in this order. Duke, 1, Louisville, 2, Carolina, 3, Virginia, 4. And in terms of the top 25 and 1, I've got Duke at number 2, Louisville at number 4, Carolina at number 8, and Virginia at number 10. So I've got four top 10 teams in the ACC. And I really do think that you could reasonably put them in any order. Like, I don't think that – I mean, maybe you'd be really stretching it a bit to have Virginia number one, but you could just base it on, I believe in Tony Bennett, so get out of my face. But the other three, North Carolina, Duke, Louisville, I think you could have them number one in the ACC totally reasonably because you know, they've all got the type of roster that could do this, with Duke obviously being the youngest of the bunch.
I agree. Here's why I don't have confidence in any of the teams at this point in being like top three, top four in the country. With Duke, I don't think the freshman class this season is as good as it was last season. I think Trey Jones can be awesome, but is he going to have a jump shot this season? And can he be like the kind of totally put it on my shoulders kind of player? Are they going to be missing that piece? I don't know. I gotta wait and see. I definitely am admittedly probably the heaviest seller on Duke of anyone you might come across in the national media. Louisville. Jordan Nwora is a really good player. Louisville hit this weird wall last season, Parrish, where they suddenly could not stop turning the ball over. They just didn't seem to be a team that handled tough games well. Can they get over that? I like their athleticism, their length. I think they can be really good. Like, I think they're going to be a top 10 team, but I'm just not convinced that they are totally well-rounded enough to be in that top five. With Carolina, Cole Anthony will probably be their only legitimate three-point shooter, and how legitimate remains to be seen. So if they don't have an outside attack, and he is not the kind of guy that many are expecting him to be, and that by that I mean like 20 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds kind of deal, and probably be playing like 90% of the available minutes for UNC, if his body can handle that, I think that's a potential weakness for them. And Carolina, by the way, lost its top five scorers. That's never happened in the Roy Williams era. It's probably never happened in program history, considering what it used to be, unless you were starting five seniors back in the day. So the change over there might be interesting. And then Virginia, they also don't have proven perimeter attack at this point. And while I'm all aboard that Jay Huff bus, he's going to have to really like bring it up two or three other notches there. So I just think there's reasonable doubt in the big picture with all those four teams. But I do think it'll be fascinating. And then NC State's kind of considered that fifth team. And I don't know if you've got them there or not, but there is a noticeable gap. Who would be, just to circle back to the other part of my question there, I mean, I'm looking at your picks right now, so I know who the pick is, and I guess we agree with it, but who would be that team that you have as the sleeper in the league?
I don't even know that I would identify somebody as a sleeper, because to me, somebody a sleeper is somebody people have projected in the bottom half of the league that could actually sneak up and compete for a league title or in the top two. And I really, you know, when you draw the line there, so okay, let's draw the line around seven or so. Do I really think Miami, Syracuse, Clemson, Pitt, BC, Georgia Tech, Wake, or Virginia Tech are going to compete at the top of the ACC? I don't. I do believe that there's a clear-cut top four. After that, I have NC State as a not clear-cut number five, but that's where I would have them, just ahead of Notre Dame, Florida State. I guess I'd put it this way. I think the top of the league in some order is going to look exactly like we think, and I think the bottom of the league in some order is going to look like we think.
Well, I was trying to lead you there. I figured you were going to say Notre Dame because it was a 14-19 team from a season ago, and it was the worst season of Bray's career, 20 years at Notre Dame. Now, like I'm high on them as well, but And now that I'm looking at it, I think we had Chip put them high as well. They are not. I don't think they're considered to be like top six material in the ACC this season by the majority there. But they're the only program, GP, that brings back all five starters. We're in the process of building out our top 101 players, and I gotta figure John Mooney's gonna factor into this pretty soon in the process of where we're at. And plus, like, Prentice Hub, TJ Gibbs, good players, Rex Pfluger's back. So I thought you were going to say Notre Dame. I think that's the answer. But as far as you're concerned, you're buying into the fact that they bring back five starters and should set up as like a top six team so that they wouldn't be a sleeper from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I've got them sixth, right behind NC State. So I don't think it's that much of a sleeper to see them pick, you know, finishing second or third or something like that. But again, Duke, Louisville, Carolina, Virginia probably got to be the top four in some order. And Louisville, you know, they bring back a lot of pieces from an NCAA tournament team. Those are usually the type of teams we think are going to be good. But, you know, Chris Mack pointed this out yesterday. You know, they finished 2-6 last eight games. It's not like they
Yeah.
Close. Now, that you know, you look at the losses, I think really the only head scratcher on there was a Boston College loss. Like the other ones, you know, they lost to the national champ, so on and so forth. But it's, you know, I'm always, I don't know, interested to see if the teams, if good teams that return basically everybody can make the jump to great, or if they just stay good. You know, I think there was a question about Tennessee last year. You know, they were a really good team. Can they go from really good to great by bringing everybody back? And I think they did. I mean, I know they didn't go to a Final Four, but I think Tennessee was genuinely great for the most part last season. Now, can Louisville, which was a good team, can it take the jump to great? I've got them preseason top five, so I'm saying yes, but I could understand if somebody was trying to argue the other side.
All right, good deal, man. Well, we'll wait and see. I think the ACC's got a shot at being the best league in the country if the bottom half can play up. We wait and see on that. But until then, hey, are we actually supposed to believe that the implementation of stripper poles and money guns was not on Kansas's radar? We're going to get to that right after this.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
So Late Night at the Fog was on Friday night, and we knew going in that Snoop Dogg, D-O-double-G, was going to perform. We did not know that it would include strippers. Or at least acrobatic dancers.
Thank you. Let's be accurate for the matter of the record here. Acrobatic dancers, Parrish.
Acrobatic dancers on stripper poles, or what appeared to be stripper pole ish. And they had a money gun. They were shooting cash at their basketball.
Hold on. Well, I know. So you are getting right into how I want to get some definitions at the start of this. This is an incredible story. Is it a stripper pole if a stripper is not utilizing it?
I think so.
You think so? Because it could just be a pole.
Yeah, no, well, it's a stripper. Like, well, I could hand you a baseball bat, and even if you're not a baseball player, it's still a baseball bat.
Okay. So we think what was part of the stage setup, the props. All right, so we're going to go with those were stripper poles. I'm not necessarily disagreeing. I just want to get this down as a matter of the record. That's all.
I think I knocked that argument out of the park pretty quickly off the top of my head.
Yeah, if I'm holding a baseball bat,
even if you're not a baseball player, it's still a baseball bat. Similarly, if you're on a stripper pole, it doesn't matter whether you're a stripper or not. That's a stripper pole. You're on a stripper pole.
Okay. Well, but a baseball bat, generally speaking, you know, we're not even going down this road. Okay. So they
on a stripper pole with a baseball bat.
That's where it's going. And they had the money guns, but hold on. Let's rewind here because we got to break this whole thing down. We didn't talk about on the podcast the fact, I don't think we did, the fact that the promotion for this event, okay? So you saw the video, of course. This was 12 days ago that this video was posted on the Kansas official men's basketball Twitter account. When it gets posted, I need your theories on this, Parrish. So when it gets posted and it's undeniably an amazing video. It is a slow-mo Bill Self strut, black and white, wearing a shirt with the biggest... I don't think that you can find a shirt with a bigger Adidas logo on it in the known universe, okay? He's going into the record store. They're promoting Late Night in the Fog. Snoop Dogg's going to be there. He's got the money chain. He's dapped out. Parrish, when that's published, we are 4 days removed from the public knowing that the NOA has been served at Kansas. So do you think, which of these scenarios do you think happened? Do you think they got the NOA and then they said, we're filming this anyway. Who gives an F? We're doing this. Or do you think they might have filmed it 2 weeks prior, got the NOA and said, we've already got the production done. We don't give an F. We're doing it anyway. Because I'm fascinated by the idea that Kansas gets, you know, locked in this serious issue. Like, Bill Self is going to be suspended. Postseason ban could be on the table. And then they drop this video. So before we even get to Snoop Dogg getting to Allen Fieldhouse, I need to know what you think about the process of that video and what went through to even publishing it in the first place, because it was the harbinger of, obviously, the horrible things for Kansas to come.
It was so over the top that I have to believe it was in response to the notice of allegations. I mean, like, to your point, Bill Self has, I would argue, 50 different Kansas tops he could wear. Polos, white shirts with KU on it, blue shirts, red shirts. I'm like, it's for him to pick the shirt with, like you said, perhaps the biggest Adidas basketball. It doesn't even say Kansas. It says Adidas basketball. After a note, like 4 days after a notice of allegations arrives, accusing Adidas basketball of buying players for you in a way that's going to cost you a Final Four, cost you wins, ding your reputation, probably lead to a suspension. You're in the biggest Adidas basketball shirt. I don't think that's an accident. If it were just like a Kansas shirt and he's wearing the chains and he's getting a Snoop Dogg album, maybe. But the Adidas basketball thing, I think, just puts it completely over the top.
Just, honestly, it was incredible. And when it was posted and, you know, we heard, if this was Sean Miller, actually, I wish Sean Miller would do something like this, but Sean Miller doesn't have it in him to do it. But picturing Sean Miller doing something similar, by the way, Arizona had its Midnight Madness festivity, if you will, on the same night as Kansas. And it's a really good thing for Arizona. GP, I'm betting you did not even know that happened. Did you even know that Arizona's was the same night as Kansas?
No idea.
No idea, right? And I didn't know it until I learned of it Tuesday morning. So that's it. If you're Arizona, you want to be doing this on the DL as much as possible, and Kansas is the exact opposite there. Okay, so they have Snoop Dogg in the house, which is, by the way, a great get and something that everyone that's attending Kansas, like, if you're in, that's an awesome thing to have. Can we just be clear on this? Getting Snoop Dogg is like one of the ultimate gets you could get. To me, Snoop Dogg's better than anyone that Memphis had at its. Like, I'm taking Snoop Dogg over Future, Moneybagg, yo, get him out of here. I want Snoop every single time.
Well, here's the thing. Snoop is going to appeal, I think, to everybody. Like, everybody in the stands, like anybody my age or your age, like, we grew up with Snoop. Like, those are hits. You know them. So, like when Lil Baby walks out on FedEx Forum Court, the 47-year-old mom sitting on the fourth row doesn't know what's happening, right? Like, they might recognize Future, but yeah, like, they won't understand Future. So like, everybody knows every word to every Snoop Dogg hit. And then the young people, even if they ain't waiting for a new Snoop album, like, they understand that Snoop. They understand, like, once upon a time, that guy was a big deal. Snoop is, I don't want to speak for young people. I think Snoop is still cool to young people. Even if young people aren't listening to him, they know he's a thing. Is that fair?
It is fair. It is fair. Without a doubt. And so now you've got him, you know, it's the culmination of Late Night in the Fog, which, by the way, is always like, they put a ton of effort into it, just in terms of the entertainment, the presentation of all of it. Like, some schools are like, all right, we'll do a dunk contest, a funny skit with the freshmen and all this stuff like that. But with Kansas, it's always like it's usually a cut above, because obviously the program means so much to that community. And then, so all this goes down. You've got, I mean, the vision of a school embroiled in one of the most important cases in NCAA history, Parrish, and you've got money guns going off, acrobatic dancers. It's just, it's incredible. I really think this is one of the best stories of the year in college sports. And then after the fact, I mean, it's a total joke. Like, apparently Bill Self was not on the floor when the money guns were getting shot off and fired at the players and the crowd. Fake money, of course, of course. But Kansas to be like, we didn't know what, you know, what we did not understand that this was going to be part of the act. We deeply apologize. You've got Jeff Long putting out this apologetic statement. Meanwhile, did you see the mean mug of Jeff Long back to back with Snoop Dogg, like as promotion in advance of the thing? Did you see this photo?
No.
Oh my God. I want you to picture, you know, a white athletic director in his 50s trying to mean mug with a hip hop artist in your mind right now, and it is exactly that. You have to find this photo. It was put out by I believe the Kansas official basketball account on Twitter. I bet you it's long since been deleted, but someone shared it like the morning after on Saturday, and I was like, this is just too
incredible. I got it.
You got it? Look at that.
It's ridiculous.
It's so good and so bad. But just it's just too rich. It is just dripping in irony, if you will, that Kansas, which already played victim with all the other FBI stuff, you know, and then signs up with Adidas, gets this Snoop Dogg stuff, has this huge apology for it because they know it's just a horrible look. It's hilarious, but it's a horrible look. And now they're dealing with all this. And I'll say this. I had a few people, coaches and others, come up at ACC Media Day, and they didn't want to talk about name, image, and likeness. They didn't want to talk about, you know, the top four teams in the ACC or whatever. Their basic words were, "What the hell is Kansas is doing? What the hell is Kansas doing? Or what's Bill Self thinking?" Like, this has become an even bigger embarrassment for Kansas to the point where, while we can laugh about it, I get all that. There are men that went to jail for this. Okay, it is a serious issue, and you've got a university and a coach that had extremely strong statements that ran counter to what the NCAA put out in its NOA, and now you have this, and people will say, hey man, I like Bill Self, now it's just reached a point where they're like, you have this, man, like, that program has it coming to them, they should have a minimum postseason, 1 year postseason ban and all this, so it's easy to mock, but it is actually caused, like, genuine, like, WTF-ness around college basketball, and I found that interesting as well.
Well, it's another reminder that the whole defense, or, you know, not defense, but the way the government built the case against Jim Gatto and Merle Code by talking about they defrauded Kansas. Like, the case right now, according to Kansas's official position, is that Adidas basketball, specifically TJ Gasnola, got us in all this trouble. We didn't know what he was doing, and if we'd have ever known, we'd have stopped it. And if not for Adidas basketball, we wouldn't even be in this situation. That's their official stance. And then Bill Self's rocking an Adidas basketball shirt. Like, come on.
With the money chain. With the money chain.
With the chain. Oh, it's ridiculous. All right, so there's that. And, you know, it's just like Snoop has subsequently said. Like, what did you think you were getting? Like, who did you think was showing up? Like, I'm Snoop.
Hey, now, say the exact quote as he presented it, because that's the best line.
When you pay for Snoop Dogg, you get Snoop Dogg?
That's right. You're going to get Snoop Dogg. Right. As you should.
It's funny. It's funny, like, Bill, at this point, like, in the past year, Bill has been shocked that TJ Gasnola was maybe buying players, and shocked that Snoop Dogg was maybe going to put on a slightly inappropriate show. Bill has to constantly come out and be like, that old TJ Gasnola, he had me fooled. It's like, no, he had nobody fooled. No, nobody was fooled by TJ Gasnola. Everybody knows exactly what TJ is. That old Snoop Dogg, boy, did he blew my mind. Like, what? Like, that's exactly what I would assume. Like, he beat a murder charge, for crying out loud.
I know. Oh, like, my gosh.
Like, people forget that because, like, Snoop's so lovable now. He was facing a murder charge.
Yep. Someone mentioned that to me actually specifically yesterday and how they found the whole thing, like, funny yet sad, yet, like, Kansas was a joke for everything they went through. Yeah, I know. It's just – it's – you – I'm always surprised yet never should be surprised at the kind of stories and events we get. This is – absurd. Credit for Kansas for booking Snoop. How much do we think Snoop cost, by the way? What's your, I'm gonna say, for that kind of event, all told, what, 200,000? What do you think the bill was?
It can't be 200,000 for 30 minutes.
But it, bringing the poles, acrobatic dancers, money guns.
I'd say you could get that done for less than 100.
There's no way Snoop is taking a gig for less than six figures. That's not happening. There's no way. You know what? I need, we have to have the answer for this. I need enterprising Kansas beat writers to file a Freedom of Information Act, because that's going to be on the books. We need to find out eventually how much that is. So you're saying what? Like, you think it's 90? I don't think it's 90.
I'd say 75 grand in a private plane back and forth.
Okay, you factor in the private plane, maybe. I don't think Snoop's taking a gig for less than 100 G's. I don't know. Ain't nothing but
like,
100 G's.
I know when Memphis, like, gets Future and Lil Baby, they have to send a plane to Atlanta.
Okay.
They'll send a private plane down and get them, bring them back, take them, whatever. So I would say private plane and 75 grand for 30 minutes. But let me also say, I have no idea. It could be 150. I have no context. But it'll be on the books. Yeah, like if some Kansas beat writer wanted to figure it out, I'm certain that he or she could. I mean, but like the money guns, I mean, like, do you realize the NCAA believes that somebody was providing cash to Silvio De Sousa's people to get Silvio De Sousa to enroll at Kansas. Like, that's a thing. And you're shooting fake money at him inside Allen Fieldhouse. I mean, it's the funny. Let me be clear.
It's hilarious.
I am 100% rooting for Kansas to go undefeated. like there is no more perfect college basketball story than Kansas. Like, is it Kansas Duke in the Champions Classic?
You know what? That's a good question. Off the top of my head, I don't know who they play.
I think it is Kansas. Kansas should destroy Duke the way Duke destroyed Kentucky last year, and then just go undefeated. just go undefeated and win the national championship with Bill Self rocking gold chains. Because I've had coaches ask me, like, and these are guys who are friends with Bill. They're like, what is he doing? And same thing you're hearing. And it feels like they've told him, like, yo, you got 8 months to live. Live it up. Like, hey, this is going, the bottom's about to fall out of this thing. Like, you're going to be suspended. We're going to be scholarship, postseason banned. Like a storm is on the way, and it's 100% going to hit us. So, like, just have fun in the meantime. And it sounds like he's just trying to have fun in the meantime.
Just incredible, man. Just what a visual, what a story, what a response, what a joke of a response then from Kansas thereafter. All right, since we are on the topic of Snoop Dogg, I wanted you to – I'm going to give you a few hip-hop artists, and I want you to rank them in order of your preference, okay? These are not – these. I kept it to the 90s, okay? So these are guys who kind of made it big in the 90s, fairly mainstream, just to keep it, you know, keep it easy on you.
I will say this. Okay. I am weird in the sense that I listened to more hip-hop in my 40s than I listened to – you know, when I was 19, 20, 21 years old.
Really?
I think that's probably true.
I mean, you definitely listened to a ton of hip hop, but I didn't know that it was something that you came to later in life. That's all. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, I listen. I grew up with Snoop and, you know, Ice Cube and N.W.A. and all of that stuff. But, like, I didn't have, you know, so-and-so's mixtape that he was selling out of his trunk. Like, I didn't really deal with that when I was in my 20s.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. So, I think one of them kind of crosses over 90s into early 2000s, but plenty would argue that his best records were in the 90s. So the fifth one I'll mention here is the one that kind of straddles the line. Same, like, Eminem's not listed, but to me, Eminem was right along that cut line, so I kind of put him more early 2000s. So here are the five. Rank them in order of preference. Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
Tupac.
Okay.
Biggie. Nas. Okay. And then the one that's kind of right there is Jay-Z.
Well, I'd go Jay.
Jay is your number one of those five. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm more familiar with his work. Then Tupac. We'll go Tupac 2.
Okay.
We'll go Biggie, Nas, Snoop.
Biggie, Nas, and Snoop last. Okay. Not bad.
Snoop's got bigger hits than some of them. Like, Snoop's got bigger hits than Nas, right?
Yes, without a
doubt.
Okay.
But nobody thinks Snoop's more talented than Nas.
That's correct. And just because he's not considered more talented doesn't mean that, you know, you can't like one versus the other. That's definitely That's definitely true. I didn't throw in Dr. Dre, but he might have my favorite record of all of them. But he's like hip hop artist, and he got into, you know, a lot of production there. He's one you could also put in there. I would rank them. To me, it's Biggie by far and away number one. Just think he's got the best songs, has the best flow. Think he's was a great lyrical writer. I would go Biggie one. I think Snoop is two, because while all of those artists and plenty of others, you know, shouts to Rakim, have distinct flows about them, just the way that they are able to write songs, to rap, the way they sound. To me, there is no more distinct hip-hop artist in just the way that he sounds when he is rapping in the history of the genre, to me, than Snoop Dogg. And I've always liked the way that he sounds. So I'd go Biggie 1, Snoop 2, I'd go Tupac 3, and it's a close 3. And then, to me, it's a little bit of a drop-off. I would say Jay 4 and Nas 5, but that's only because I never, like, really got into Nas. Like, I tried, but and I'm not, like, the biggest hip-hop head by any means, but, you know, a child of the 90s, there's no doubt about it. Like, it got into my life in a really good way. But for me, Nas would be a 5th, and I would even put Nas behind, say, like, a Dr. Dre. And there are definitely, like, hardcore hip-hop heads that are like, you are out of your mind, you white boy from the Northeast, having Nas that low. But for me, he's just he's the only one of those who I just never click with. But for sure, the two that I still play, like, frequently, I still listen to a lot of Biggie and still listen to plenty of Snoop.
Like, if you were, so I'm 42 years old, so, like, you know, Snoop becomes a big thing. Like, when I'm freshman, sophomore year in high school, I mean, I had to look at the years, but that's my memory of it, at least. And, like, it's impossible to overstate how big he was. Not only did everybody know Snoop, everybody knew every word to every Snoop song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, every word. Every word to every Snoop song. And that's why, you know, putting him in something like Allen Fieldhouse in 2019, you know, despite all the, you know, the stuff that went down, it actually works because, you know, let's be honest. It's going to be 16,000 mostly white people of older white people. That's who's there, and old white people love Snoop Dogg still to this day, right?
It's and that's a great thing, by the way. Just the fact that, you know, the genre was born in the late 70s, New York City, and then Snoop and Tupac really brought, like, a lot of the West Coast influence there. And yeah, it continues to expand out. Okay, one more extension off of this, because I know we have plenty of listeners that probably enjoy this part of the discussion there. So if you inserted...
I was thinking we probably have listeners that don't.
But we definitely have listeners that do, because this is the most popular genre in music, like, 15 plus years going here. So let's throw in Wu-Tang, let's throw in Tribe, throw in Outkast, throw in Beastie Boys, and throw in NWA. I'm thinking off the top of my head here. If you throw in those five, would you take any of those five over over Jay or over Tupac?
No.
Oh, wow. Oh, for me, it's the opposite. Like, I would definitely take Tribe and Wu-Tang and Outkast over probably any of the individual artists. Yeah, for sure. And maybe, I like Biggie more than Beastie Boys, but it's close. Really?
Right.
Who's your favorite of the... okay, so are any of those groups... Are you more of, like... Because I know, you know, we like our Run the Jewels and all that stuff, and I like, you know, like Pusha T and all that, but are you just more of an individual hip-hop artist kind of guy as opposed to group collaborations?
No, like I like Run the Jewels. The Watch the Throne album I thought was terrific. That's Jay and Kanye. So I'm not against, like, a hip hop duo or group or whatever. But I would take Jay. The question was, would you take Jay and Tupac over any of those? And the answer is yes to that. I would take all five of the initial ones over. You know, like, NWA was a big deal, you know, again, like, everybody knew every word, even, like, white kids from Mississippi, like, everybody knew every word to that album. So I certainly listened to more of that than I listened to a lot of this other stuff.
I dig it, man. Hey, listen, I, you know, like, floating into a little of the music conversation, and Snoop Dogg, open the door, man. Seriously, though, that's really one of the best stories of the year. Like, it's got just... We're going to look back and be like, we can't believe that actually happened there. So
I did think, just to wrap this back to sure. that situation, you know, like it could be counterproductive. Like, ultimately, you're going to be punished by humans, and they're humans who, like, know how you try to throw Adidas basketball back in their face with a video. They're humans who know you had a – you seem to be taking the situation so not seriously that you're just shooting money guns at your madness event. I mean, really, you know, within a couple of weeks of the NCAA, levying serious allegations against you. So if I were in charge, I would have said, nah, let's stay away from all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But clearly they've taken another approach, and I will say their approach is more entertaining than what my approach would be.
It is entertaining, and I'll just wrap with this. It would be really interesting to hear the conversations, GP, because what the video and then Snoop Dogg coming and the money guns and the polls and all that stuff, you're not breaking NCAA rules, but you're exacerbating the issue. So will the NCAA, in a moment where it knows it needs to come down hard and present these huge penalties? I mean, we look what happened to Georgia Tech. Will it use that against Kansas? And will Kansas try and fight back? If you're an NCAA Committee on Infractions member, there's no way, if you're trying to make a message, like, you don't respond in kind to what Kansas did here. But is that allowable within, you know, the new rules and bylaws when it comes to punishing that stuff? It's a fascinating discussion, like, jokes aside there, because you would think that it could potentially worsen things. It doesn't make things better, but will the NCAA and those in charge be able to, you know, further punishment based off of what Kansas publicly did, like, just completely disregarding? Like, you can't say that what Bill Self did in that video and bringing Snoop in wasn't something of a middle finger to the NCAA. That's all.
Yeah, well, I mean, people, like, in the same month or couple of weeks in which the NCAA has basically labeled you publicly a rogue program, to then have stripper poles, dancers, and money guns just sort of play, and your head coach wearing an Adidas basketball shirt with gold chains, it just sort of... It's almost like the perception, at the very least, is that you're doubling down on being a rogue program, being an outlaw. And I just don't know how that's going to play with the NCAA people, who are ultimately going to decide how severely you're punished. Perhaps it will have no impact, but I would assume that it probably will. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. And remember, subscribe to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, wherever you get podcasts, most notably Apple Podcasts. While you're there, and it really just takes a click, 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 like, you're subscribed. It's very easy, matter of seconds. While you're there, rate it favorably, 5 stars. Leave a nice comment, and we will be back next week. We'll do it again. Till then, take care.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley: One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.